Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young here in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening and welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The past weekend in Melbourne, Australia, saw a first-time Grand Slam winner in Denmark's Caroline Wozniacki and the incredible 20th Grand Slam win for Swiss superstar Roger Federer. Federer has now won six times in Australia and two times in a row after not having won the first major of the year since 2010. Federer beat Croatian Marin Cilic in five sets. Federer split the first two and then rallied to win two of the next three to take home the title. He has three Grand Slam wins in the last 12 months, including last year's victory in Melbourne and his win on the grass at Wimbledon last summer. Federer, 36, says, age ain't nothing but a number.
I've won three slams now in 12 months. I can't believe it myself. I just got to keep a good schedule, stay hungry, and then maybe good things can happen, you know. Then I don't think age is an issue per se, you know. It's just a number. I need to be very careful in my planning and really decide before what are my goals. What are my priorities? And I think that's what's going to dictate how successful I will be.
There was some discussion after the match whether the tennis should have been played in the extreme heat of Melbourne, which checked in with a temperature of 38 degrees Celsius during the day, or as it was indoors with the air conditioning on. Cilic had warmed up for the match outdoors and was not comfortable that Federer had the benefit of acclimating to the indoor conditions during his warm-up routine. The temperature with the roof closed was a much more comfortable temperature for the players to play their best. Federer said he didn't think the temperature difference affected the match results. He thought he would have been fine either way.
Of course, I backed myself in sort of indoor conditions, you know, this is where my first success ever came. So I do think back at that usually when I play indoors, it's good for me. But I didn't mind the heat, to be honest, you know. I thought that maybe for a bigger guy like Marin, maybe it's going to also slow him down faster throughout the match. But at the end, it's not my decision, you know. They kept me posted along the way. I was surprised to hear that they had the heat rule in place for a night match. I never heard of that before. So when I arrived to the courts, I was totally ready to play outdoors. And then they told me they're thinking, or they think that it will probably be indoor. And then they kept me posted along the way. And half an hour before, we got the word that, okay, it's going to be indoors. And for me, it didn't change any in the preparation, to be honest. I was ready for either.
That's Australian Open men's tournament champion Roger Federer saying he feels so good these days at the ripe old age of 36 that he could have defeated Marin Cilic in the heat or the air conditioning of the closed Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne. We move to the women's tournament, which did not have Serena Williams in the field. It was wide open, and Caroline Wozniacki took advantage. If you remember, Williams won last year's tournament while she was already a few weeks pregnant. She gave birth to her daughter in late 2017 and was not able to compete at the season's first big event. Williams says she will return to action in March at the BNP Paribas Open in the California desert outside of Palm Springs at Indian Wells. In the women's final, Wozniacki took down Simona Halep. The first set went to Wozniacki in a tiebreaker before the two women, fighting for their first ever major championships, split the next two sets to give Wozniacki the victory at Rod Laver Arena. Williams, watching at home, said she was not able to keep the match on her television as she was feeling so nervous for her friend Wozniacki as she went for her first major. With Williams's absence from competition for most of 2017 and all of 2018 so far, the victory will also give Wozniacki the women's world number one ranking for the first time since 2012. It is the first time a female player has reclaimed number one status after losing it so many years before. Wozniacki said it all came together for her in the tournament, and Halep said she was just too worn out by the end of the tournament to put forth her best effort on Saturday.
You know, I've had a great last 18 months, and I think, you know, everything just came together these 2 weeks, and a little bit of luck, a lot of great play and fighting spirit, and it all came together. I'm just overwhelmed. I had an hour and a half sleep last night, so it's not much. I think I'm just overwhelmed, excited, happy, the mix of a lot of emotions.
Let's move on now to boxing. The big news from a busy weekend is that Ghana's Emmanuel Tago successfully defended his IBO lightweight title. And there was a result in women's under-20 soccer qualifying for the FIFA World Cup. Kwabena Quicksilver Afori reports from Accra.
Ghana's Emmanuel Tago last Saturday defeated his Argentine opponent, Fernando Saucedo, to retain the IBO lightweight title. Tego, who looked balanced and strong from round one, was cheered by the fans at the fully packed 4,000-seater Bukom Boxing Arena. Although the rounds were going on well for the Ghanaian boxer, but some of the fans were unhappy when Tego started throwing rapid punches and received warnings from the referee. In the 10th round, Tego continued throwing illegal punches to the back of Saucedo's neck and brought him down. However, the Ghanaian referee, Roger Bano, stopped the fight and awarded a technical knockout victory to Emmanuel Tego. In another development, Ghana's under-20 female national team beat their Cameroonian counterparts 3-0 at the Cape Coast Stadium in their second leg of the final qualifier to reach the World Cup in France. The Black Princess of Ghana qualified on a 4-1 aggregate after their first leg 1-1 draw in Yaoundé 2 weeks ago. For the Sunny Side of Sports, Kwabena Fori in Accra.
Thanks, Kwabena. I don't know about you, but I am looking forward to one match in the near future. That's the heavyweight bout at the Barclays Center, the home of the NBA's New York Nets, in March. That will pit heavyweight champ Deontay Wilder, undefeated with 38 knockouts, against undefeated Luis Ortiz. In other boxing news, we want to update you on the match we mentioned last week. Sharif Bogere easily won a decision over Arturo Reyes in Las Vegas to update his career record to 31-1. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America.
VOA. Here on The Sunny Side of Sports, every sport is fair game, so we continue our whip around the world and spin the globe to Southern California and La Jolla outside the city of San Diego to check in on Tiger Woods, who returned to serious competition for the first time since February of last year. Woods, as you know, missed the majority of the 2017 season due to serious back surgery. He underwent the fusion of the L5-S1 vertebrae last April. One of the last times we heard from Tiger prior to the end of 2017 Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas was when he was pulled over by police in Florida in late May. He said he was under the influence of painkillers after the surgery. Fast forward to this week, when Woods barely made the cut after completing play on Friday to make it into weekend action at Torrey Pines. Woods had his best day on Saturday, shooting a 2-under 70. The round included 4 birdies, highlighted by a pair on consecutive holes, including the 612-yard 13th, which started with a booming 314-yard tee shot. Woods closed Sunday with an even par 72 and 3-under for the tournament. He, with a handful of others, tied for 23rd place. It was the first time Woods was able to finish a tournament since 2015.
Sorry, you know, overall, I'm very, very, very happy the way I was able to fight out the scores. As I was telling Dottie over there, these weren't yawners. You know, down the middle on the green, missed the first one, one hand the second one. These were grinds, and I fought hard, and it was nice to see that I'm able to still grind.
That's Tiger Woods talking about his first full tournament in almost 2 years, where he finished tied for 23rd place. Woods was asked about Roger Federer's Australian Open win and whether he might be able to perform well into his 40s.
Yeah, he's young. He's 36. I guess it's all relative. In that sport, he's very old. But you know, in our sport, I'm only 42. That's not that old. Davis won it when he was in his 50s. BJ did well all throughout his 40s. So it's very possible out here for us. But to do what he did at his, you know, with his scheduling, the way he's done it at 36 years old, very smart.
The true stars of the weekend, however, were a trio of golfers who finished 4 rounds tied with a score of 10 under par. Those heroics belonged to Jason Day of Australia, Alex Noren, a Swede who attended Oklahoma State University in the central part of the U.S., and American Ryan Palmer, also in his early 40s, like Woods. Palmer needed a birdie on the 18th hole Sunday to make the 3-man playoff. Palmer was eliminated after the first playoff hole, and both Day and Noren survived later into the California night. They played a total of 5 extra holes before the tournament was suspended due to darkness. Day and Noren will tee off at 11 a.m. this morning in California. Tune in tomorrow for an update on the winner. One funny note for our listeners, the golf tournament was televised on the same network that hosted the 2018 Grammy Awards for Music in the United States, and music fans tuned in to see the red carpet arrivals. They used Twitter to express their disappointment that they could not see musicians like Bruno Mars and Kesha make their way into the theater, and instead had to suffer through a handful of golf shots before the tournament was moved to the Golf Channel. One music fan wrote that he would rather watch paint dry than watch golf. Let's move on now in the world of sports to the lead up to Super Bowl 52. The big game takes place this Sunday in the northern U.S. city of Minneapolis, Minnesota. The game features the New England Patriots going for their record-tying 6th National Football League title against the Philadelphia Eagles, who are looking for their first Vince Lombardi trophy in 3 tries. The game is a rematch of the Super Bowl that concluded the 2004 season, which saw the Patriots defeat the Eagles 24-21 in Jacksonville, Florida. The 2 key figures who are still active from that game are New England quarterback Tom Brady and the Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. Brady led the Patriots as an unheralded young quarterback to their first NFL title back in early 2002. When he takes the field on Sunday, he will have played in 8 Super Bowls. The Eagles arrived Sunday in Minnesota, and as we speak right now, the Patriots are in the air, where their plane left just about an hour ago from the airport outside of Providence, Rhode Island, just a short drive from their stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. In Minneapolis, the pregame weather forecast on game day is 10 degrees Fahrenheit. That's negative 12 in Celsius. Kind of amazing that we can talk about one venue in Melbourne, Australia, being 90 degrees warmer in Fahrenheit for the tennis, and another venue in Minnesota being bitterly cold. But listeners, take heed. It will not be below freezing inside U.S. Bank Stadium where the game is being played, because just like in Australia, there is a roof. The players will have no worry about the freezing weather outside. We will hear later this week from experts who have been following the Patriots and Eagles all season. But here is one important note. In addition to Brady and Belichick, who are Super Bowl veterans, remember, Brady led the Patriots back from a 25-point deficit to win last year's Super Bowl over the Atlanta Falcons in overtime. There are, according to the Boston Globe newspaper, 35 players on the New England roster who have played in at least one Super Bowl, while just 7 Eagles have played in a Super Bowl, and 2 of them played last year as members of the Patriots. We will talk with Boston Herald sports editor Sean Leahy later this week about the Patriots' preparation for the Super Bowl.
The Voice of America.
Let's move on to another type of football that may be more familiar to our African listeners. Over the weekend, the African Nations Championship saw 4 quarterfinal matches. Morocco took on Namibia, Zambia faced Sudan, Nigeria played Angola, and Democratic Republic of Congo took on Libya. Our colleague Samson Omale joins us now with a report on the match results and some more details on the under-20 Women's World Cup qualifying. Good evening, Samson.
We begin in Morocco, where the semifinal pairings for the African Nations Championship CHAN, a tournament for the continent's locally based players, was concluded this past weekend. Super Eagles of Nigeria came from behind to beat Angola 2-1 in one of the quarterfinal matches played on Sunday through substitute Gabriel Okechukwu in the 108th minute to book a place in the semifinals. Nigeria will now play Sudan in Wednesday's second semifinal in Marrakesh. Salisu Yusuf, coach of the Super Eagles, has expressed satisfaction at his team's qualification.
We are very happy. If you observe, Angola qualified as a quarterfinal with only 1 goal. So it's not a matter of how many goals you score. It's a matter of you are not conceding and you can score 1 and qualify. And that's the most important.
In the other late kickoff on Sunday, Libya progressed into the semifinals of the 2018 African Nations Championship after beating Congo 5-3 in a penalty shootout after their quarterfinal match ended 1-1. Libya will now meet host Morocco, who defeated Namibia 2-0 in Casablanca in the first semifinals on Wednesday. And on to women's football, where Nigeria and Ghana will represent the continent yet again at the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup after they respectively edged South Africa and Cameroon on Saturday. The Falcons of Nigeria beat Besesena 6-0 and 8-0 on aggregate, whilst Ghana Princesses won 3-0 against their Cameroonian counterpart to claim the other slot 4-1 on aggregate. After a qualification process that involved 17 teams in Africa, Ghana and Nigeria came out tops to return to the global finals, which will take place in France from the 5th to the 24th of August. Yusufu Basigi is the coach of the Black Princess of Ghana.
Well, it was my dream to qualify to the World Cup. I knew it was not going to be easy because for qualifiers, you can't underestimate any country. Because now the women or the other all countries are of age when you talk of women football. So you don't have to underestimate any country. I knew I could qualify but it was not going to be easy task.
With Ghana, and let's tell you that Ghana's Premier League champions, Aduana Stars, have lifted the first trophy of the 2017-2018 football season after defeating Asante Kotoko by a lone goal in the Super Cup in Obuasi. The Super Cup, the traditional season opener, pits the league champions against winners of the FA Cup, and Aduana proved their might against the Porcupine Warriors. And that's it for sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you in Washington.
Thanks, Samson. I hope your week is off to a great start. We'll be looking forward to the results of the semifinals coming up on the evening of January 31st. A reminder, the finals will be played on Sunday, February 4th in Casablanca, Morocco. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing
Now it's time to review the weekend that was in the NBA. A mix of news and close, exciting games highlighted by some big performances from Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, Joel Embiid, and Russell Westbrook. But first, some sad news to report about New Orleans Pelicans big man DeMarcus Cousins. If you remember earlier last week, Cousins had one of the best individual performances for an NBA big man since the 1970s. He recorded a rare 40, 20, and 10 game last week as the Pelicans defeated the Chicago Bulls in overtime. Cousins moved in a trade late last season to New Orleans, and that night he played 52 minutes with 44 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. It was only the 10th such game in league history, and Cousins joins Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, and Elgin Baylor in that category, with Kareem last recording those stats in the 1970s. However, on Friday night, NBA and Pelicans fans received some bad news as Cousins was injured in New Orleans' win over the Houston Rockets. Cousins was at the free throw line in the last seconds of the game. He missed the shot, and as he landed going for the rebound, he reached down and grabbed his left leg. Cousins had to be helped off the court and was later diagnosed with a torn Achilles tendon. Pelicans coach Alvin Gentry talked about how the team will handle the loss of their outstanding player the rest of the way.
I think the thing that we talked about is the fact that we still have a goal in mind, and it's still obtainable. You know, obviously, when you lose a guy, especially a guy that's having the kind of year that DeMarcus is having, you know, I've got two guys that's having like MVP type years, and obviously, as we won more games and moved up the ladder, I mean, you know, I think you would have heard their name quite often there. So, but that being said, you know, we have to put that, you know, we have to set that aside and get back on track and understand that, you know, we have a lot of work to do, but, you know, everything that we set out to do this year is still in front of us.
That's Pelicans coach Alvin Gentry on the loss of his star big man DeMarcus Cousins. A note to go along with Cousins' injury, Paul George of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who we spoke about last week missing the All-Star team, was added by Commissioner Adam Silver. He's going to play for Team LeBron as they take on Team Steph Curry in the All-Star game coming up at the Staples Center in a couple of weeks. Sunday, we're going to wrap things up with a nice matchup between Oklahoma City and the Philadelphia 76ers. The 76ers with Cameroonian big man Joel Embiid took a 58-57 lead at halftime, but Russell Westbrook pulled the Thunder to a 122-112 victory. And that wraps up the January 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, launched a civil society and media strengthening project in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, in mid-January. It is called Boresha Habari, or Better News. Implemented in coordination with nonprofit organizations InterNews and FHI 360, the Boresha Habari project will collaborate with Tanzanian partners, including the Media Council of Tanzania, Tanzania Boro Initiative, and Jamii Media, to improve professional capacity among journalists and support an open media environment. Over the next 5 years, the Boresha Habari Project aims to work with media houses and radio stations in Dar es Salaam, Zanzibar, Iringa, Mbeya, Morogoro, Arusha, Manyara, Dodoma, Tanga, Mtwara, Mwanza, and Kigoma to improve their professional capacities. Specifically, Boresha Habari will provide media outlets with training and technical assistance, help them adopt new digital technologies, and strengthen their management and financial viability. The project will also train civil society organizations to effectively partner with the media. The U.S. government is committed to supporting the professionalization of the Tanzanian media and civil society, particularly empowering women and youth to raise their voices and concerns effectively as both producers and consumers of information, remarked USAID Mission Director Andy Karas during the launch event. The United States is proud to work with its partner Tanzania to help build a strong and vibrant civil society supported by a free and independent media.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we discuss cholera and what is being done to contain the disease in Zambia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll review the death of 38-year-old Ugandan refugee Alfred Olungo, who was shot and killed by police in California in September 2016. His death was among several captured on video in a year when anger over U.S. police shootings, particularly of black men, rose to new heights. Olungo's status as a Ugandan refugee brought international attention not only to the issue of race, but how police react to people who may have psychiatric problems. VOA and our partner station NBS TV in Kampala teamed up to examine what happened and whether the shooting could have been prevented. The death of Alfred Olungo on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.